Hello, everybody, and thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams, our co-host. Daniel, good to see you.
How are you this morning, Dr. Paul?
I am doing very well, thank you. And you have a little bit of hoarseness, but you said you are ready and raring to go.
I will do my best, sir.
Oh, good. So, but we have a doctor in the house in case you need a little bit of help.
Yeah, I probably do.
Well, anyway, there's some other people need help, and you know, we don't believe in euthanasia, but here we have an announcement. Somebody's brain dead or something is brain dead. Should we pull the plug out? Yeah. That sounds pretty serious stuff.
It does.
And if people don't like that and I get into trouble over this, I'm going to say it was your idea. Yeah, but what we're referring to is, you know, a little squabble going on, you know, between our president, who used to not like NATO, and with the French President Macron, and they're getting ready to meet. And what does Trump do? Sometimes I have a hard time figuring out. Trump hated NATO. We should get out of it, and yelling and screaming. And the French one time did get out of it, you yeah. know, under de Gaulle. That was great. I remember that time. And now here it is. The French aren't too happy with NATO. And they, and Macron said, it's brain dead. What are we going to do with it? We don't have a job. Of course, we'll talk about what he thinks he wants to do with it. But anyway, Trump's response is, oh, that's lovely. I'm glad you caught up to me. I'm glad you agree with me. No, he says, why are you picking on NATO? They're my best friends. I have my best friends in NATO. But I think the friends of Trump would say he has a strategy. And you're here to explain that strategy and find out what's he scheming for. But anyway, it's routine. There's nothing a whole lot different, you know, attack and then they become best friends. I mean, whether it's North Korea. Yeah, there's only one place that Trump hasn't pulled that, I think, is with Iran. He's never said anything nice about Iran. And even in this episode, you know, at the 70th anniversary now of NATO, you know, there's no kind words said for Iran. And that's why people should stay unified. But there's no doubt, and I know you know this history so well, is NATO, you know, did have at least a stated purpose, even though, you know, Senator Robert Taft objected to getting in NATO, thought it was a bad thing for us.
Yeah.
But still, they said that was the key peace in Europe. But, you know, in the last few years since we've been doing this program, NATO hasn't had many battles to fight in Europe. You know, a closest thing to being really involved was to see token support they gave for the coup in Ukraine.
Yeah.
You know, the European Union and NATO wanted to get rid of the elected leader. So, but NATO's still busy. I mean, we have to keep the budget going. We have to buy more weapons and tanks in case there is a war. So how could you have this equipment and didn't use it? So guess what? Our government, and it's not Trump, it's all our presidents, and it's all the deep state that we have to go hither and yon, finding a battle to fight. And, you know, we've been in Afghanistan and various places and we throw our weight around. So, but it's interesting now to see this squabble at NATO. I think it's a sign that NATO is very, very weak. I do not think it's a sign that the plug will be pulled, but someday its effectiveness will be pulled. And I think we're approaching that time.
Yeah, and the meeting is this week to mark the 70th anniversary of the alliance. Of course, 30 years later, then the whole purpose of the alliance has disappeared, which is the Soviet Union. But sparks flew today between Macron and Trump, because as you point out, Macron said earlier, well, he said last month, that what we're seeing here is the brain death of NATO. You know, the U.S. is pursuing a unilateralist track, and we Europeans need to really work to develop our own military strategies and capabilities. But he asked a key question in this interview, and it was an interview he did with The Economist. He said, who is the enemy today? And what will Article 5 mean tomorrow? Those are super key questions. Of course, Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, said Macron is very insulting by even questioning this. But it's interesting what happened today. The two of them were standing on stage, Trump and Macron, and Trump got a little feisty to Macron when Macron was doing some pushback. Trump said to Macron, would you like some nice ISIS fighters? I can give them to you. You can take every one you want. And Macron got pretty ticked off. But then Trump continued, the one that benefits the least from NATO is the United States. We are helping Europe unite and go against a common foe. May not be a foe. I can't tell you. Interestingly enough, even as he attacks Macron, he's proving the point. He's saying, I don't know who the foe is.
You know? But Trump did claim a victory of sorts, and that's why he's not quite so harsh about NATO, is he's convinced Canada and other countries to cough up. They haven't done it yet, but they have agreed to put more money, which would relieve the number of dollars that we have to give in. But they've talked about making all our allies pay their full bills, but that's been going on for a long time, and I don't think that is going to change. But the policy will be forced to change because, we don't have a strategy. We don't have a goal. We don't know why the NATO, exists. And then Trump puts it in the words he puts it in when he's talking to Macron. This is very nasty for you to talk about this. So I would say that it's not exactly the best of diplomacy. But I guess there's one thing that might even be worse, is fancy diplomacy that is 100% insincere, conniving to do great harm. Maybe we could say, well, at least it's out on the table. And I think that might be one of the traits of Trump that people like. You know, he might, shoot from the hip and all, but at least we hear something, a difference. And I think people like that, and certainly some of the things that Trump has said over the years about political correctness, it touched a nerve with a lot of people. So this is not going to end. The French were out of NATO. That was in '66. They got out of NATO militarily speaking, but they never fully got back in until 2009.
That's amazing.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
And the headquarters for NATO was in France. I remember, the world's falling apart. The Soviets are going to invade Europe and all these kind of things. But if we'd have never touched it, never kept troops there, what makes anybody think that it would have been overrun by Soviets or the Russians? They were not able to do that. And all they had to do was, if they wanted to have some agreements, fine, to protect Europe. But this whole idea was, commercialism and war profits and power, and it coincided. That was part of us building our empire. So I think NATO has, as has the UN, been an arm of the American empire. At times, I even believe that, we were total victims from these groups. But no, I think they're an asset to the empire because we have the dollars and we have the weapons and we still have economic clout. But the sentiment and the endorsement for the United States to run its empire and use these organizations, that's coming to an end.
Yeah, it is. NATO provides a fig leaf for U.S. foreign policy action. Going back to Serbia in 1999, they had no business being involved in that. It all has the cover of NATO in Afghanistan. NATO's involved, and it gives the Europeans this kind of sense, this illusion that they're partners, but they're not partners. They tag along with whatever Washington demands. But, we both saw a piece written by John Lockland, who's on our academic advisory board and is an old friend of mine. He has a great piece on NATO at 70. We sort of stole a little bit from the title. But he makes the important point that he said that Macron even had to ask who's the enemy shows how badly NATO has lost the plot. They don't even know the enemy. He talks about, and Macron caused a stir because Macron answered the question saying it's not Russia. It's not China. And by doing that, he breaks with NATO's real purpose. The Baltics and Poland freaked out because they still believe the enemy is Russia. But it's, and Lachlan always also points out that even in NATO's own documents, they're talking about challenges and not enemies. Their official strategic concepts, John says, I'm quoting, it sounds like Piglet in Winnie the Pooh, frightened of everything. And this is from their document. Terrorism, piracy, ethnic violence, inadequate economic reform, threats to energy supplies, arms proliferation, drug traffic, cyber attacks, laser. It's like everything they put in a basket. they say, well, NATO will take care of this, just looking for a purpose where the central purpose isn't even there any longer.
That's right. And of course, John made a bit of fun about saying that the direction of the NATO should continue and embellish all of the fighting of the terrorists. And, you know, and that's that is, of course, so misused. It's overblown. They don't understand why there are terrorists. And then they never measure the cost. As far as I'm concerned, the biggest cost in fighting terrorism is when you go on an airplane flight, you know, the TSA and abuse of our liberties. And that's getting worse. Our Patriot Act on more. It's always terrorism. So, yes, there are problems out there. But for NATO to come in and think that they can help us on this, the only, if we're concerned about our personal liberties here at home and the Patriot Act plus, then it's our problem. It's maybe we're diluted and distracted by being in NATO and United Nations, but it's still up to us. It's up to the American citizens whether they want to put their foot down and say, hey, you know, enough is enough. And the more I look at some of these law enforcement agencies, especially looking at what happened in 2016, and people have come in our way. The statistics show that people don't even trust. They don't even trust the government. Yeah. They don't trust the FBI. And certainly, I hope they continue with their questionable trust in the CIA, because that's who runs a lot of this stuff behind the scenes. And those are the problems we have. But NATO is not going to help us solve those problems. We have to have some firm beliefs, maybe in the Bill of Rights or something like that.
The crazy thing about NATO is now it's 30 years after the end of the Cold War. NATO still thinks it's 1958 or 55. And actually, we have a JPEG. This is the NATO Secretary General, Jens Stoltenberg, just this week. NATO will respond to any attack on Poland or the Baltics. Like, what is he talking about? Are the Russians about to jump in their tanks and ride over into the Baltics and Poland? What would they do when they got there? You know, hey, great, we got it. It's totally insane.
That reminds me of a question I asked back in probably the 70s or in the 80s, and they were, you know, having a big budget for building a lot of tanks. And the monster then was the Soviet monster, and it was real. I said, but it's the intervention that is the problem. But I said, where are you expecting this tank attack? Yeah. When are we going to have this tank? Do you think the Russians are going to come over and down through Alaska and come down here and invade us with tanks? Or are they going to make a landing down here? The whole thing is preposterous, except it's not stupidity. It's somebody wants to make some money off here. And it's sort of like Trump. He was saying, too, this came up even in this recent conversation when it had to do with Syria. I guess he was getting some criticism. Why'd you leave leave Syria and pull the troops out, which he did. He says, well, I told him I didn't want him there, and I took the troops out. But I told them it was our oil, and we'd be watching, and we'll be taking care of our oil. So, yes, the troops are coming home. They don't come home. They're actually at it. But it's our oil, and that bothers an individual. Even if you're an interventionist, or especially for us who are non-interventionists, to try to figure out what he's doing, you know. I don't know whether this means that they think they can appeal to both sides, or whether they're going to offend both sides. Generally speaking, when you get a mixed bag, I've noticed this over the years politically, if somebody's been on both sides of the right to life issue, try to accommodate both sides, they lose both. I think that can happen in foreign policy too. You try to accommodate and say, well, we'll do this, but this, and we end up with no benefits at all.
Yeah. It's difficult to sympathize with Merkel and Macron, but in this case, you can almost understand, though, what is the heck are the Americans going to do next? You know, it's very confusing. Back to what Lachlan said, and he pointed out that Macron said, you know, it's not China, it's not Russia, this is not our enemy, but our enemy is terrorism. And John said, he's got a point, because that is really what's really threatens us. The Russians aren't about to come, you know, over the plains. But he said the problem is that NATO is the last organization to deal with terrorism. As he pointed out, as the recent London attack, all you need is a knife to be a terrorist. But NATO has tanks, nuclear weapons, bombs, fighter jets, ships. It's totally useless against a guy with a knife stabbing people in London. So it's as John points out, this is a national police issue, not an issue for nuclear weapons. And I would just add to what John says, it's also an issue of foreign policy interventionism, because the reason France is facing ISIS fighters coming home and Trump is chiding them for it is because they were happy to send all the jihadists into Syria for regime change. So they got sucked up into Obama's stupid war in Syria, and now they have all these crazed jihadists wanting to come back home to France, you know.
Yeah, and we suffer from the same, a similar problem with that. I mean, the wars go on and we support them, send them over there, and then there is this unintended consequences and the blowback. And then you come up with people who like to see disturbance in this country, and then they mix it up with immigration laws, and somebody wants to defy this, and they get these cities that are, offer them up sanctuary to defy the law, and at the same time, these countries in Europe are almost like the problems they created. They make them sanctuary countries,
yeah.
And they just come flowing in. And Turkey, of course, has been in the middle of all that, and they both suffered and have been unable to handle that because of the overall policy. And you know, I know there'd be problems similar to this, but if we'd have been non-interventionists, you know, for this century, I think that types of problems like this would probably be minimal, you know, compared to where they are now, because our policies have been aggravating. But of course, it would have. You say, well, the Europeans certainly don't know much about non-intervention, but they might have been in their best interest to do it and to come together. Every once in a while in history, they'd have come together and not had a lot of fighting.
Yeah, and you say Turkey's in the middle of it. Also, Hungary. You know, Hungary. The Prime Minister Viktor Orban had a huge, huge upcry, you know, because he said, I'm not going to take these people. We're not going to take these refugees. We don't know who they are. They're not Hungarians. Of course, everyone went crazy. Merkel wanted to bring them all in, bring them all in. So, you know, the both sides of the coin, non-interventionism and not making refugees. But I just want to close by reminding our viewers that today's Giving Tuesday. Maybe it's a little gimmicky, but it's an important day for us to and for nonprofits to try to raise some money, to try to pay our expenses for the show, to try to keep going. We're fighting every day against things like NATO that are sucking your wallets dry, so you'd have a lot more money the more influence we have. So please consider making a tax-deductible donation to the Ron Paul Institute, which is sort of the umbrella of the show today. And, of course, we have a wonderful thank you gift for those who give $50 or more. Ron Paul's new book on our huge bankruptcy. And for $100 or more, he'll sign it. I'll have some details in the description of today's show on how you can make this Giving Tuesday a special one for us and help yourself as well. So thank you very much.
Very good. I want to follow up a little bit about the subject of sanctuaries, which is a consequence of the foreign policy, as we talked about, and people coming back or invading. And there's a lot of resentment toward cities that become sanctuary cities, and they defy the laws of our immigration problems. And they see this in a narrow political sense. But one of the things the far left does on sanctuary cities is they say, we will write our own laws. We will defy the federal government. And if they don't do that, in tech, they have a technical point. You know, why isn't this a state issue? Of course, sanctuary means that you can't really do it, and it gets a little more complicated than that. But the principle of saying, yes, the federal government says this, but we are going to challenge the federal government, and we are going to take care of refugees. And you know, they have a point. But why this is interesting to me is now the pro-gun people say, why don't we have sanctuary cities for gun ownership and get the federal government out? So that's an interesting subject. If you could channel this whole idea that the federal government doesn't offer us a whole lot on you know, law enforcement, they give us the war on drugs, and look how that's worked out. So it is interesting that it could and should be handled at a more local level. This is a sloppy way to do it, but the principle is there to get the feds out of the way. Just like the other principles, get the internationalists out of the way, too. We don't need NATO to be safe, and Europeans don't need it. They're the ones that are crying the most. And there's always a group of people, the insiders, the money people, the financial people, that has an interest in what they're doing, because there's a lot of profits to be made, and a lot of problems for the deep state to work out. But this is in flux right now because it's changing. I think all foreign policy is going to change, monetary policy is going to change, and we are going to see a big problem where financially we'll have to adjust and look at these particular issues and maybe confess up about maybe we've had some dumb policy, and maybe we've had some dumb, financial problem, tax problem, and also, monetary system. But then again, we may have a really bad understanding of what a good non-interventionist foreign policy should be like. That's our goal here at this channel, is to try to get people to understand why non-intervention is a good position. It's an American position. It's a pro-liberty position. It's a common sense position. And I think that should move all people. Oh, common sense. It's going to help everybody concerned. Well, at least we believe in it strongly, and we will continue to do it. I want to thank you all for tuning in and supporting our program. And please return to the Liberty Report soon.